Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Coast City Podcast, Actually Comics, for Wednesday, November 7th. I am Tristan.
I'm Bob.
And we're going to be talking about some books this week that got some spiders in them, some bats and some whatnots and some super stuff.
There's some ghosts.
Some ghosts, some gentlemanly ghosts.
Yeah, and some space ghosts.
Some ghosts in space, yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
so,
lots.
Yeah.
In no particular order.
In no particular order. Let's get started.
Okay.
And actually, you know what? Since we're doing this, I'm just going to get this out of the way right at the top.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure everybody knows all of the comics that we're going to be talking about today. They're all available on our website and free shipping for code BLARG. B-L-A-R-G-H exclamation point.
It looks like the best code ever.
So if you want to get these books, we have them. Support us. It helps us stay afloat, which is nice.
Yes.
And then I spend less sleepless nights worrying about where the money's going to come from. It'll be great.
Yeah,
all right.
Don't do that to Tristan.
Yeah,
order things with
that?
Code BLARG. You can do it. You have the power.
Yes.
Today's the day. You can take the future into your hands.
Seize the Spider-Geddon.
I seized it. Spider-Geddon number 3 is out, and for some reason is first. It is Spider-Geddon-y. There's lots of different spiders. My favorite of them so far is the one that is called the Spider's Man, and he is made of spiders, but he thinks he's Peter Parker, and he thinks children taste like veal.
Yes.
This was Spider-Geddon number 3. It's, if you're reading Spider-Geddon, it's the next chapter. If you're not reading Spider-Geddon, perhaps number 3 is not the best place to start.
I would start at number 1.
Yeah.
or
perhaps at the edge. Crest the edge and then enter number 1.
So, Suicide Squad, Black Files.
I liked this.
Yeah, this is great. This is just kind of a 6-issue mini.
Is it?
Yep. Cool. And it's, it starts off. Comes in hot with Gentleman Ghost.
Well,
I'm stoked.
Sorta. I'm an old school DC nerd. Mike W. Barr, creator of Katana, the character from Suicide Squad, writing a Katana story featuring Halo from The Outsiders, who he also invented in his brain. With Jim Aparo, the artist. Anyway, so there's that storyline, which was really cool, a Katana solo story. And then there is a second story, which is the formation of a Black Ops, even more Black Ops Suicide Squad with Gentleman Ghost. And that was really neat to see him because he's cool.
Yeah.
That was by a different writer and artist.
Yes. So also Batman 58 is out this week. Really good, really strong story.
Yeah.
It's got a penguin in it. It's got lots of Alfred cleaning up the Batcave.
Yeah, it's the start of a new arc and basically continuing on with this whole Bane is the force behind everything. And I didn't know the penguin had relatives that died recently, but apparently they did. And no spoilers because it didn't happen in the issue. And yeah. They clean the teeth of the Tyrannosaurus Rex in it. It was surprisingly good. I've been kind of down on some of the depressing Batman comics of late. This one was just kind of fun, decent.
I feel like a fool because this was the one that I was looking forward to the most this week, and I forgot to read it.
Which is it?
Which is The Empty Man.
Ah, this is the only comic in this entire stack that I read every single word of. Because I flipped through them a lot.
I presume you enjoyed it.
I did. So it's Cullen Bunn and an artist named Jesus Hervas, and some others. And it is called The Empty Man, number 1 from Boom. And it is a virus that is called The Empty Man. And so when you get it, you start obsessing about this empty man. And then you start doing crazy things. But everyone's doing that. And this,
ooh.
And so you're kind of, the point of entry is a family where the mother is in the beginning stages of the empty man virus, but it kind of goes in a different kind of, in the way that like sometimes the zombie things are about like the behind the scenes and how people are fighting the zombies. This gets into a little bit of that, but it was very readable, very, interesting. I'm curious, about what the empty man is and how certain people seem to know a lot about what it is. But
awesome.
Good Cullen Bunn horror.
Yeah, I mean, anything Cullen Bunn does, I'm usually on board for.
I would recommend it for fans of The Walking Dead type of thing.
Okay.
But, that even though it's not a zombie, it's definitely not zombies. It's a virus kind of thing.
Okay. Green Lantern number one.
Ooh.
This is probably the most anticipated book this week.
Man.
We've got Grant Morrison returning to a major like mainstream DC title and really Grant Morrisoning it up.
Oh, he's like really 2000 AD-ing it up. I really, really am gonna press the 2000 AD.
Yeah.
It feels like if Green Lantern came out in Britain in the 1980s. But like in a totally super awesome and good way.
Yeah, it's very strong. It's sometimes you get a Grant Morrison story that is so impenetrable, so just so laden with like continuity and crazy stuff that happened in the 50s that no one read, that like no one else understands except for him. This is not that. This is absolutely accessible, but also smart enough to be not just another boring Green Lantern story.
Definitely. It has the feel to me in certain ways of the Alan Moore when he was doing the Tales of the Green Lantern core.
Very much.
And you have kind of weird new Green Lanterns, which I really like. But the Hal Jordan take, I think, is a little bit of a departure in that he's just like super bro-y and super just kind of like in part of the story is like he's a former test pilot, but it's like, yeah, I work at a toy fact. I can't remember what it is. It's some like, oh, he works at a gas station.
Yes.
And his girlfriend, who isn't like any character you've ever seen, is like, why do you do that? You were a test pilot. And he's just like, I'm space cat, baby. You know, like that kind of whatever. But it's really smart and it's really cool. Like I loved the new characters. I think I didn't realize how badly I wanted cool new Green Lanterns to appear.
And that's the other part, is that it's very sci-fi.
Yeah.
It gets a lot like where Green Lantern tries to a lot of times kill the sci-fi in order to make it more superhero friendly. Mm. This is really embracing the sci-fi nature of it. And the art is just so cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
This is, to me, the art is where you get the 2000 AD look. Like, it reminds me of
Liam Sharp is the artist.
What is the name of that dude that did Dread when it was the best?
Oh, you mean Carlos Ezquerra?
That's actually not who I mean, but I do like him as well.
Okay, well, there's him.
The guy that invented the Judge Death.
Bolland?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
That stuff. That's what it reminds me of. I get a distinct feeling of that era of Judge Dredd, except with like tons and tons of sci-fi.
Yeah, that's cool. I almost get a kind of a Kevin O'Neill
flavor
too, which is. But it's funny because Geoff Johns did the whole Green Lantern Corps as police force metaphor, but it never really felt like they were police officers. They felt like they were the Green Lanterns and they were just calling themselves police officers and organizing themselves like police officers. This feels like a police procedural with space.
They're trying.
Cool.
I think it's really interesting that they're trying to, he's clearly trying to get the procedural element into it. And then, so it is a police procedural, but it's also hard sci-fi with like very few human characters, which is great. Tons of monsters, tons of weird space people. I love it.
And there's some really great like little dialogue, which there's one where this spider bites Green Lantern's finger off that has his ring on it. It's like, that was my favorite finger, you savage. And, like, really cool stuff. One of the new Green Lanterns is literally like
cold virus.
Like, yeah, like a stomach virus. And he's like, I can make the diarrhea stop. And he's just like, please cure me of your Green Lantern plague. I don't know. Those are just like little bits that are just funny and within it. But it was just really strong, really great. I love having Grant Morrison back doing this kind of stuff.
Me too. Yeah. I am super, super sold on this series. And speaking of series, this is another one of the books that I just...
God
damn. I can't get enough of this book, The Immortal Hulk.
Mm.
It's not a spoiler to say that at the end, when they realized that he was an unkillable death machine, they said, well, maybe we turn him back into Banner and cut him into tiny little pieces. And so now he's in a bunch of different jars, and all of his parts have turned back into the Hulk, and he's still kind of sentient, even though he has intestines in one jar and feet in another
jar. Oh, he's completely sentient.
He is cut into little tiny bits and held in different jars, and there's a scientist who's poking at him and prodding at him and trying to figure out what makes him tick.
If you follow from the standpoint that the Hulk is immortal and unkillable, and then you put him in that scene in The Walking Dead when the governor has all the heads in the fish tanks.
Yes.
It's that, and somehow still is an amazingly good comic.
This
really, really good. Definitely still riding that horror vibe, but also with greater Marvel Universe characterizations, and like Ms. Marvel is part of it, and just kind of like, it's clearly like 100% within the world of the Avengers and Marvel and whatnot, but it's just, it's its own thing. And I think it is, I don't know, I think it's the strong, it's my favorite book from Marvel right now.
Yeah, it's, it, I think it is my favorite. It might be my favorite book from Marvel, or like period.
Yeah,
but
it's
either
up there.
Either way, I mean, just even down to there's a Hulk to Banner transformation, and it's so grotesque and like The Thing-esque. It's wonderful.
Yeah, there's a lot of Cronenberg take on the Hulk transformation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very like Cronenberg's The Fly kind of look to his transformation. It's great.
Yeah, good stuff.
Good
That's
stuff.
Number 8 from Al Ewing and Joe Bennett.
Yes. All right. So they're drowning the Justice League this week.
Yes. And I thought the art was really good. And that's really the most I can say about it, because I didn't. I don't really get this whole thing with I support it because I support the Aquaman film and I want them to do cool things with Aquaman. And I know that this is like the reason this is on my radar and why I will wait until they're all out to read them fully is it's setting up the new run of Aquaman, which I'm very excited for. It's going to start next month, I think. And it just looks really good. And I think they're finally embracing the Brave and the Bold cartoon version of Aquaman and the movie version of Aquaman. And
yeah.
And I think it's great. I love Aquaman. I've always thought he was great. And
yeah.
It's cool, but this Justice League comic is weird. Superman has an eye patch. The Flash has a burned by acid face. There's a lot of things in it that I don't really understand because I just flipped through it.
Yeah, I think it's fun.
Also, there's water in it that turns people into fish mutants.
The first issue was really great because it had lots of fish mutants. Every time you touch the water, you turn into a fish mutant.
Yeah, don't
pretty
do it.
Pretty cool. It
happened to Gordon.
It happened to Jim Gordon. Another new issue this week is Outer Darkness from Image Comics. John Layman of Chew fame and Afu Chan. Very cool.
Yeah, this looks great. I did not parse this fully because this is a book that I want to sit and read and not just like rush my way through. But it looks like great.
So this is a book that I started doing as a like, I'm just going to kind of skim through it, whatever. And I was like, this is boring as hell and I hate it.
It's like a Starship Enterprise kind of thing.
And then I went back and actually gave it a fair shake and I love it.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Like, do not ever like, this is not the kind of book that you can just kind of flip through. It's very important to follow it.
Yeah.
And it was, it's great. It's essentially, you're looking at, like a Starship Enterprise type situation in a world where ghosts can possess people and that they're coming from outside out in space. They're basically floating in and taking over people's bodies. There's some other weird demonic stuff involving the way that they travel. There's all sorts of crazy shit.
Are these the ghosts?
I assume.
Yeah, because there are basically like,
I believe they're the ghosts of aliens, but they also speak English.
Mm. Yeah, it's cool. And
not 100% sure.
I can't say enough good things about the art in this. I love the art in this.
It's cool.
So good.
And there's a couple.
Coloring is really good too.
There's a couple of really cool little like moments that are crazy. When you see, like that. Pretty great. Yeah.
Good,
I dig it.
Good, strong start from Skybound, from Walking Deadville.
Yeah, absolutely.
The publisher and of Walking Dead. Kind
and
of
again, just, you
imprint.
Know, if you've never read Chew, you should probably read it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Cool.
Crowded, number 4, is out. This is that story of the Tinder app for murderers.
Yeah.
where you can just pay to have someone killed.
I guarantee this is going to be a series, at some point.
It would be nuts to not make this into a TV series.
Yeah, it's like
this has TV
doable.
Series written all over
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and the art is so good.
It's so fun.
Love the art in this book.
This issue is the most dense of them so far, and it is dense.
Yeah.
Like, this is like, what's his name? Perez. This is like Perez levels of like little tiny panel work.
George Perez.
Like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Could see that. Yeah. It was definitely
one. It's beautiful and it's so well written. And it's just, I would dare say a masterpiece, and I think it's going to be a thing.
Yeah, I think this is going to be something that will translate into other genres pretty easily. This is issue 4 of Crowded, Christopher Sabella, and Ro Stein. I'm reading it upside down. I apologize. I can't actually read English, I swear.
I'm going to say Ro Stein.
Yeah.
All right. And Sandman Universe stuff. We've got The Dreaming Number 3. This is a book I love.
Yeah.
I read it this week. And I loved this stuff. There's some real crazy shit going on with a sort of Witchfinder general type character who is going to clean up the mess that's going on in the dreaming. And it's getting real dark.
It has Glob, too, right?
It does.
That guy. I love that guy. Glob.
Who is basically the sugar man from...
yeah, he's like a nightmare. He like eats nightmares or something like that. He's a Kirby guy that like they folded into the...
He's a big meatball.
Sandman universe. Yeah, he's like a big meatball made
big
of nightmares.
Evil meatball made of nightmares.
So a book that for me is a on-site, like I love this, is the new Umbrella Academy number 2, Gerard Way, Gabriel Ba. I can't tell you anything about this because this is one that I'll save to read, and it just looks amazing, and I think Gerard Way is awesome. I like Gerard Way when he's not doing things that are about his band. That's the only thing. He's done comics that have been based on his albums, and I haven't liked those. But like Umbrella Academy, I love, and this is the continuing of the overall Umbrella Academy story. I love his Doom Patrol, like we talked about last week. So it's just great to see Umbrella Academy back on the shelves. And when one or two more are out, I will read them all, and it'll be too late to tell you about how great they are.
Too late. Speaking of things that are too great.
Oh
man, Border Town number 3 is out.
Love it.
I'm so into this book. I'm so glad that it went the direction it did because I was very sad about the bad guy chupacabras. Hey, it's just a thing. I don't want to see people killing chupacabras. Yeah. Give me a break.
Well, you might still see it.
Yeah, that's fair. But we've got we now have the friendly chupacabra who is the friend of the kids. And I can't say enough good things about the art in this.
Yeah.
This might
be Vila Lobos.
Yeah, this might be one of my favorite art books art wise.
Yeah.
I feel like he takes what I loved about Frank Quitely and then takes the potato faces away and actually draws human faces on them. And I mean, again, Frank Quitely used to be one of literally like probably my top 2 or 3 artists. And this, I think I like better than Quitely. I think this is a better adaptation of what
this
he does.
This just feels like someone who, like you said, gets like the kind of the finer points of what's enjoyable about his art style, but also does it in a way that you know you won't have to wait a full year in order to get one issue.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't
like it's not precious,
and exactly,
and it's really. But this
no backgrounds. I mean, I will say that he is very sparse with backgrounds. Whereas you know when you get Quitely, he's like, hold on, there's a trellis here
I have to draw every single
flower.
Yeah, I'm going to do a
so
computer
beautiful.
Model of like the entire world and then draw this one angle of it.
I mean, that
no,
that
I love
splash.
Frank Quitely. There's few that are better than him, but I would say I will go so far as to say that if you are not reading Border Town, you should read Border Town.
Yeah,
as long as you are over the age of 18, because I think you can only buy it if you're 18. Is
oh
that
my
right?
goodness! I don't care.
You can buy it if you're
It says mature readers. I feel like that's an emotional state.
Yeah, that probably is like less of a thing than it was when I worked in the comic stores back in the olden days.
Yes, now that literally anyone with a computer can access the depths of depravity on the internet.
Yeah,
it's like who cares about somebody seeing a chupacabra bite somebody on the arm?
Yeah, yeah,
too violent.
Yeah, I guess I'm dating myself, I guess, by even saying that thing. But either way, Border Town, I think, is one of the best new series out there, and love it, and I would recommend that it be read.
Yeah, again, agreed. Okay, so Deadpool number 6.
This was an out of nowhere for me. I loved this issue.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Standalone, pretty much,
Deadpool
just
is
a one-off fun story.
Deadpool is really sad. And he is refusing to do his killing job, and there is a guy who is trying to kill him. But the funny thing is that every time he gets set up to kill or be killed, he's trying to get killed. Deadpool is trying to let this guy kill him, and every time the kill shot gets set up, some Marvel Universe happening occurs, and there's cameos from the Fantastic Four and Doctor Strange and all kinds of, basically, if they're base stationed in New York, they're probably in this comic. And I just thought Deadpool number 6 was really fun. And it was one issue, you know, no arc, no thing, no, just a great story. Scotty Young and Scott Hepburn, who I really like. He does like fill-ins here and there, and I like him a lot.
Yeah. Okay. So here it is. Doctor Strange, finally back from space after a while. He's been back for one issue. One issue? Two issues.
Yeah.
And
I think this is the first issue where he's
back. Oh, really?
Or he got back last issue or something.
Yeah, he got back last issue. That's right. And this is where I want him. This is it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
but he kept a lot of the characters from the space.
He did, but all that matters is that the fucking dog is in this.
Yeah, and the dog is.
The dog is all over this, and I love it, and I'm so happy. Like, I was so worried that the Jason Aaron edition of the ghost dog was going to just be forgotten, because that's like my favorite thing about this run. I mean, obviously, it usually is, but so good.
Yeah. Also, there's kind of character return at the end of Doctor Strange that I was like, wow, they haven't used that person in a while, surprisingly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's out, Doctor Strange number 7 for Mark Waid and other people.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, when Tristan puts them down, they're upside down. I can't read them.
Doctor Who, 13th Doctor, number 1 from Titan Comics is out.
The first one with the female Doctor Who.
Yeah. Cool. And it's actually pretty cool.
Nice.
I'm not a huge Doctor Who fan.
Yeah, I don't follow Doctor Who, so I didn't.
But I skimmed through it and I was like, oh, this is actually, it's very well drawn, and the story is actually pretty compelling.
Yeah, it looks like a high quality Doctor Who comic for fans of that. You might want to check it out.
Yeah. Super delayed. this was supposed to come out like 3 weeks ago. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, number 3. This is, so I gotta say, they are working so much harder than they need to on this book. It's funny. It's gorgeously drawn. It's got lots of crazy, wacky situations that are more than they would need to do. Like, an Elvira comic is one of those things that you kind of would expect them to just go, okay, cool, just put whatever the fuck you want between the pages. People are going to collect the covers. Who cares? And that is not what they did. Great, great art, lots of crazy classic monster stuff. They're going for, you know, original Frankenstein, original Dracula. She's meeting Edgar Allan Poe. There's all sorts of weird stuff, and it's fun. I think the delay is probably because of the art, because the art is, again, way better than it should be for an Elvira comic. Craziness. I think it's great. If you would ever have the inclination to read such a thing as an Elvira comic, this is the one to do.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it looks good.
It's great. God.
Farmhand.
So many things that I really like this week.
Yeah, Farmhand, the end of the first arc. Yeah. And it ends in a, there's a, wow, okay, crazy. Farmhand is a great series.
Yeah, this series. So
this is the other half of Chew, Rob Guillory, right?
Yeah, I think that's how you say it. I think it's Guillory.
Guillory.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Rob Guillory.
Rob Guillory's farmhand. And this is the thing where they grow human parts in out of trees.
Yep.
That's a terrible. Plants. It's like plants.
Yes. Yeah, so it's essentially someone who has a farm that they grow human body parts on to replace missing limbs and ears and hearts and whatever. But then what happens when
they're inside the people?
Yes, and something dark and terrible is going on with something is corrupting the people from the plants.
Yeah.
Here's something that we never mention because it just doesn't sell terribly well at the shop, so I just kind of ignore it.
Well, that's because like the last two issues have just been him going to funerals.
Fair. Green Lantern 46. This was very fun.
Yeah, it was good.
If you like the TV show, this is probably the Green Arrow for you. Mm. It feels like a nice mesh of the TV show and the comic world where he looks like Green Arrow from the Justice League, but it plays very much like the TV show.
Yeah, I actually thought the art was really strong in this. Whoever the artist is, Peralta. And then there's the two writers. They are no longer on the series, so there will be like a creative shift coming up, but I think they're wrapping up there. Their arcs.
Yeah. Speaking of things that kind of play like the TV versions, Marvel Knights, number one, is out by Donny Cates.
Yeah.
And I love this book.
Yeah, it's cool.
I mean, again, if it says Donny Cates, you're probably going to love it. Like, this guy, he's going to burn out eventually. He's got to. But Jesus, for now, he's like just nothing but net. This one, you've got Daredevil shows up. He doesn't remember who he is.
No one remembers. Except for some reason, the Punisher.
No. The Punisher remembers who he is because Banner told him. I think Banner remembers because he changes. I don't know if that's...
I see. See, I was expecting something more along the lines of the old school Marvel Knights, and this is definitely like a fresh take on it, and
yeah.
It's nice to read a Marvel comic featuring lots of Marvel characters that you don't have to know what's happening in Infinity Warps or like Spider-Verse.
Because
or
they
like
don't
whatever.
Know. Yeah, that's what's interesting.
Just like, yeah, there's like a really cool thing with the Fantastic Four where like Daredevil is like seeing them in the shapes of them. So he'll like see the thing, and then the thing is like, "What are you looking at?" And he's like looking in the mirror, and he sees his reflection as Ben Grimm. But like Daredevil sees him, and it's like, "What's going on? I'm crazy." And there's also some villains, the interesting villain,
yeah, really good villain choices.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a fun, just out of left field take on Marvel characters. It was cool.
Yeah,
Marvel
I am super stoked for this series.
Yeah, Travel Foreman was the artist on it.
And speaking of series, I'm stoked about.
I don't know
again,
why we always say, like, sometimes we say the artists and the writers, and sometimes we don't. But
sometimes we don't.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's things like Marvel Superhero Adventures again.
That was.
I always mention this book, even though it's a kid's book, because it is the best kid's book.
It has been getting better. I love Venom eating Thanksgiving dinner on the cover, and I love
the story of Venom stealing a pie. And like, I mean, Jesus, these are really fun, silly kid stories.
And it is almost worth the full price of the comic just for the middle pages that Ty Templeton where it's like send ups of like one in this one is like archery, but it's like Archie, but it's like Hawkeye. I don't know. It's just
yeah.
Awesome.
They do basically a Daily Bugle newspaper cartoon section,
yeah,
their comic
fun.
Strip section, and they're super fun. It's again, if you have kids, that this is the book to get them. If you want to get them superhero stuff, and you feel like they're too young for like legitimate Marvel Universe stuff, this is the best.
Yeah, it's like they have huge heads and tiny bodies, and they run around and do silly things.
Yeah, silly and fun.
Silly and fun.
Okay.
But not insultingly like stupid.
Right. Exactly.
Know? It's not like, you know, it may be for kids, but it's not like we as adults might not purchase it, but we can appreciate it for being awesome.
I hate to say it. I think I would have bought this book.
Yeah.
I think if I was subscribing still, if I still had to buy my books.
Yeah.
I think I would buy this one.
I don't. I mean, it's just not. But I want to own every single one of those Bugle things. Like,
yeah.
I love them. And like I keep saying, it's like it's almost just those pages alone are almost worth the full price of the comic. If they did those as like their own thing, like I would buy that as a collection, like hands down.
Yeah. Okay, so let me talk about this one.
Yeah, you'll have to really field this one because I didn't really.
I don't want to be a jerk about this one.
Yeah.
Because I love Tim Seeley, and I loved the direction he was going with the first issue. So Shatterstar number 2 is out. The first issue kind of, to me, promised a world that was going to be a sort of combination of the Hawkeye series where he's managing a building, the Fraction run,
mm-hmm.
where it's sort of this down to earth. You know, I thought this was going to be a fish out of water story with him being a landlord and being a crazy space alien. And he's got, you know, insane background of being a space gladiator, but he's got to worry about the plumbing and like crazy down to earth nonsense, like almost like a sitcom with like the most far out character you could have.
Like Three's Company, but it's an interdimensional space gladiator instead of
and a bunch of crazy wacky space aliens living along with
also
the people who are living in his building were also interdimensionally displaced weirdos. So cool. Then this entire issue is all Mojoverse stuff, and I just did not care.
I mean, I think it's a hard sell to do something that's like so, and also maybe they're trying not to tread on the Hawkeye territory or whatever. I did think one thing that's successful about the Shatterstar thing is where they have the two artists and how when he flashes back to his life in the Mojoverse, it has like that 90s kind of like stylized art. And then when it's present modern, it's got the kind of modern art. I think that was a successful stylistic choice, but I did not love the comic itself.
And again, I love Tim Seeley. Like, he is, if anybody can pull this off, he can. So I'm not going to say that this issue made me give up on this series.
Yeah. But like, I think if you love Shatterstar, you'll probably like it.
Oh, I'm sure. Again, I feel like maybe I had set myself up with some pretty heavy hopes for this series that probably couldn't be delivered. But either way, I'm going to reserve judgment until the next one.
Yeah.
But something that I don't need to reserve judgment for, obviously, is X-23.
Fun. Good.
Super fun. It's just, this one's a one-off. Again, you want to talk about a series that knows how to take the superhero thing and then bring it back down so that it's not always pushing world destruction and devastation. You've got X-23. This is what is it? Basically,
they're
21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
They basically infiltrate a high school.
Yes.
Because there's some sort of super science going on, and they're worried that there might be cloning in reference to the X-23 clones. Who knows? They go in, and you've got Honey Badger going in as a student, and Laura is a gym coach, and it's fun and awesome as usual.
And it's nice. One thing that I find myself kind of a little tiring of is the like kind of pre-programmed like 5-issue arc, 6-issue arc. And I understand trades are how comics sell in a big way, so it's not like, you know, why change it back, but it's nice when you have like that Deadpool issue where it's just one issue, this where it's just one issue, or is it just one issue? I don't know, maybe
this is definitely a one and done. Started out and then ended, and it's great.
Like you started it on page one and it ends on page 20 whatever.
Yep. And it wraps up like a sitcom. It's just very fun.
It's me not knowing how long comics are.
Okay, also, another thing I'd like to talk about is Leviathan.
Yeah.
Leviathan number 3. So, the first one came out, I was like, this is okay. I was expecting it to be a little crazier, and then it wasn't quite as crazy as it was. And then the second one came out, and I was very disappointed with the second issue. Third one has come out, and I am back on board. This was so strong. It pulled a lot of the loose threads together for me, and the art is just so.
I love Nick Patara. I love Nick Patara, and I want to like this comic more than I do. It's cool. The art is incredible, but I just, for whatever reason, I'm not really finding
the first two didn't do it for me, but this one, I gained my footing back on this issue,
nice.
And I'm super into it.
I should pay more attention to it going forward. And I will make an effort to do so.
Honestly, this next book, I really want to spoil it for everyone.
Yeah.
Because I hate this cover so much.
I mean, honestly, like, go for it. Who cares?
Guys, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
I want to now.
I know. Yeah. So, Death of the Inhumans, number 5. It's the end of the series. There's this really just like heart-wrenching fucking cover of Black Bolt standing over the lifeless body of Lockjaw, who looks like just an adorable little pug that's covered in blood. Let's just say that maybe it's not all it seems.
Yeah, let's just say that you have to believe that it's true in order for you to want to buy this comic starring the Inhumans. It's not terrible, and this was the best issue of the series thus far. This is also Donny Cates.
Oh, I don't know about that. I feel like that issue where he just started going around the halls whispering into people's ears and melting their brains was pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. But this one was... Okay. That was the best issue, but this one wasn't bad. It just is like... I just don't like the Inhumans.
That's the other part, is that I feel like the first time I've ever really liked an Inhumans comic was when they were all being killed. It's one of those things where I feel like the same thing that they did with Archie, where they were like, oh, people don't like Archie, how about we have him killed every week? And it's like, oh, well, that's not building your brand very well.
So Nightwing came out. That's a thing. Nightwing looks exactly like Batman, except for he doesn't have a bat costume and he's been shot in the head and doesn't remember who he is, and he's an asshole now.
But also his butt looks better than Batman's.
Oh, and they draw his abs at every possible opportunity.
I love it, though, because he's like, he is the male Catwoman shot. Because he's twisting and showing his ass and his abs at the same time.
Yeah, the whole thing of Nightwing in DC is so crazy to me, because it's like... stated like publicly by like publisher, like, I don't want to make comics with this character, I think he should die. And the fan, there's like that cheesecake fan, Dick Grayson, I grew up with Dick Grayson,
yes,
audience is so strong that they just literally can't do it. So they just come up with these like ridiculous ways to, and with the Grayson series, it was fun. With this take on
again,
Nightwing,
Tim Seeley.
I think it's, I liked the Grayson
Tim
series.
Tim Seeley knowing how to pull something out of.
And it was cheesecakey as hell, but it was like still it was just fun. It was an interesting take to me. And I don't think I'm alone. This is not an interesting take on Nightwing, because let's make him a stupid asshole and who's afraid of falling. And it's like, oh, yeah, sounds great. I'll pay $4 a month for that.
I'm always
read other comics that have the things in them that I want.
I find myself always disliking those stories when they're like, okay, it's Spider-Man, but we're going to take away his spider powers and he's forgotten who he is. And
you want it because it'll, when he comes back,
then it's a real,
you know, and the idea is like, when that works, like Thor, you know, like we'll make Thor Jane Foster, but then with that one, it backfired.
That
it's like
really
people like
backfired
because
everyone
they
was
like, boring.
Are you sure you want to bring Thor back?
Yeah, I know. Like, I still don't know why they did. It was so much better without him.
God, Jane Foster Thor was so much better a comic.
Yeah,
than
it was. Yeah, well, and even the new one, which I don't hate, I just think it's a better comic. It's more interesting.
Although, but not compared to God of Thunder. God of Thunder is
God of Thunder.
That was that Jason Aaron run with the God Butcher and all that stuff.
That was
that
cool.
Thing
but
that was
not...
basically like a Manowar album that came to life and gained sentience and went out and rampaged around the world.
I liked it better. I liked Jane Foster better than that.
I liked Jane Foster a lot.
Yeah.
But I also loved God of Thunder.
it was cool. And then last on the pile. Now, I will say, just before we get to the last comic on the pile, there are lots of other comics.
God,
that came
so
out.
Many books this week.
We had to thin the herd because even this stack, you know, I have to bring them here in my backpack and it's heavy, folks. So, you know, it's.
I listed, actually, Chad and I, between the two of us, listed 120 books on the website.
I believe it. There was a ton
Not
of books.
So.
There was a ton of books. We talked about a ton of books and we didn't even, like, we left. Like, I pulled at least 12 out of the stack that I read, and I didn't even read everything. I mean, I didn't read any of it really, but read it. But either way, so final book of the stack, Infinity Wars number 5. I thought this was the only issue of this that was readable. I liked it. It was like, to me, it felt like an Infinity War like kind of Jim Starlin, kind of Thanos, kind of, yeah. It has that, basically this is the team of survivors that have figured out what has gone on fighting Gamora with the Infinity Stones, but there are other Infinity Stones and it's crazy and Loki's doing Loki shit. And, it made sense. I cared about it. And I mean, I didn't care enough about it to buy it, but I care enough about it to, like, as a reader, to be like, okay, what happens with this? This is cool. And I thought the art was good. And this is the second to last issue. Yes?
I believe so.
I think so. So it's wrapping up for conclusion, and it's cool. Also, there's a weird, is the thing with Groot at the end, is that an Infinity Warps?
All of this has Infinity Warps with it, too.
But I was just trying to figure out if that thing with... So Groot and Star-Lord are together as one being. We are Pete or something like that.
We are Pete.
We are Pete. So I thought that was kind of a neat warp of the two characters, which is the thing that this Infinity Wars has done.
Yeah, I feel like... There was
maybe this will read decently as a trade.
If I had to offer Marvel a criticism and they would ever listen to me, mm-hmm. I would say that this was a marketing failure. Like this whole Infinity Wars, Infinity Warps, all this shit, they didn't do a good enough job informing the world at large what they were doing. If basically they had started out and they had said, this summer, a bunch of heroes are going to squish together and you're going to get, like, the Hulk is going to squish in with Ant-Man.
Miss Marvel and Kang.
You're going to get Miss Kang. I mean, I feel like people would have been on board for that idea. That kind of, like, this is going to be a crazy fun thing where you get all these hybrid heroes doing crazy stuff. And it's going to be a new world of this nonsense. And I think people just went, ugh, they're cashing in on Infinity War. Who cares?
Which doesn't make sense because this has virtually
nothing to do with it. And more than that, it's the least important part of the story is the Infinity Gems, even though they...
Yeah.
Like, that whole angle is the most boring part of it.
I feel like a lot of these things, and maybe it's just, you know, I really try not to... I don't want to yuck your yum kind of thing. But I feel like when Crisis on Infinite Earths or in the original Infinity War or, Legends or whatever, it was like, here's a person has written a story and it's the story is written. And then the crossover comes out of that. Like we can work this in here or there.
Right.
I feel like this is like, there's going to be a crossover. Let's come up with a story that will allow us to crossover.
Right.
And so it is ultimately marketing and it fails or succeeds. And sometimes it does succeed. I think, you know, as much as I think it's dark and depressing, like Heroes in Crisis seems like it's a success.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's like, but maybe that's a little bit more in the lines of the person wrote the story and they're finding a way because, that I feel like the overall crossover is kind of like failing because there's things that are occurring in that are like that should be reverberating that aren't.
I absolutely agree. I feel like this reminds me of I think it's meant to remind people of what was the other crisis, the other nut.
Oh, Identity Crisis.
Identity Crisis. It's supposed to kind of be sort of a
sequel Didio's to... trick, you know, like Didio and I think that like it makes sense. Like as much as I would love to shit all over that guy, like, cause I can't stand him. Like he clearly has created a formula for making comics that people are interested in purchasing. This Nightwing thing, for example, is like, they wouldn't have done it if they didn't think it was going to sell.
Right.
Like, I mean, I assume so anyway, I don't know. Well, it's like, I'm past the point of second guessing it. Clearly like dark, depressing,
I will tell you, it has tanked our Nightwing numbers.
Oh, okay. Hooray.
Like for the shop, this story, like we used to sell a bunch of Nightwing, and then it was like, Nightwing, he forgot who he is, and he's a dink. Okay.
Yeah.
Nope, don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Like people have been reading it for like this entire series have been dropping it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, I read 40 issues, and now I'm like, eh.
I mean, well, I'm a perfect example of that. Like Titans, like I would read just about any Titans comic, but like the Titans comic that comes out now, both of them are like, I have no interest in reading them. Like,
right.
It's like, let's take the least interesting, take the most interesting characters and either kill them or fucking change them irrevocably.
And I think that they understand. I mean,
that sounds dramatic. Nothing's irrevocable in comics.
But I will say that that seems like what Bendis is fixing. It looks like this whole new Young Justice-izing of their universe is going to be making DC fun.
Yeah, I am on board.
I hope that's what happens because it's what I've missed about DC. I would love more fun DC stories, but it has been nothing but heavy drama that, I mean, every single thing. Again, even when I saw the solicit for Green Lantern, I was like, it literally said the thing that every single series that has been launched by DC has said. It was like, it said it's going to shake the multiverse to the core. And it was like, you know that you've shaken the multiverse to the core like every 3 months, right?
Yeah, you're currently literally in the middle of a massive storyline that is all about shaking the multiverse to its core. So,
guys,
like, yeah, no,
stop
it's
shaking the multiverse to its core.
So this is, again, my t-shirt that I'm going to make with the Sharpie marker on a white t-shirt just says destroy continuity. Like, just who cares about it? Just get rid of it. And second of all, like, what was there was a thing I want to try to get back to. Actually it was Green Lantern. So then what you got with Green Lantern in this new thing was like not getting rid of what had come before, but coming up with a clear, fresh, and fun take on it. And that's why I think that Didio should go, because it's like, bring in new blood, bring in new editorial blood. That's going to be like, let's try something fun. And Bendis is doing that. Like, and here's another anti-Didio thing is these Walmart comics, which I wish everyone was reading the Walmart Batman comic that Bendis is doing with Nick Darrington. It's the best Batman I have read in ages. It's so good, and you can't sell it. That sucks.
I have to give money to Walmart to sell it.
Yeah,
I would have to buy it at Walmart and then resell it.
Yeah,
which I mean, I know Larry does that down in Lowell.
Yeah,
and I was like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, I'm buying two copies of everyone, and when it's done, I'm going to sell a run on eBay. but either way, the newest one had the first appearance of Jonah Hex's great granddaughter. Also, I'm sorry, I just admitted to being a speculator who doesn't buy things in your store, but you know, I'm kind of forced to. And I figure as long as I'm doing it, I might as well.
I might as well flip it
because I'm keeping it for myself because it's a fucking awesome and I don't buy any of the other ones. But I'm a jerk. I should just stop talking. But anyway, no, it's really good. It's really good. It's this great Batman detective story with amazing art. And it doesn't matter to me that there's only 12 pages per month. Like, it doesn't, it's just good. And it's like, I love it when there's that.
Yeah,
and there's plenty of that. And that's, I think, what we focus on.
For my money, I am not anti those Walmart books. I think the one mistake, you know what? No, it's not even a mistake. I think having them do new series and those sorts of things, I think that's super important to getting people to read them. I do see this as kind of a step towards like phasing out comic shops, which is troubling, obviously, to me. But I do think it's also helpful to the reader base. So I'm not anti.
I will take, and I, not to go too far, but I've actually thought about this a lot. I actually think that ultimately when they're done, they'll sell them as trades and you'll be able to sell them and you'll sell a lot of copies of them because like, especially like this Batman one, it's great, but it doesn't, the Didio line is, it's taking people who don't go to comic stores, who will see this comic and then it's directing them to comic stores, which I don't think is a thing that happens.
Absolutely not. Because
what I do know,
those people who, what it's doing is dragging people away from comic shops because those people know who Tom King is. The people who go to Walmart if they had released Superman and it was reprints from the 90s, it would sell just as well
exactly
to the
same.
People who yep. don't care.
Well, that's 90% of the books is literally New 52 reprints.
Right.
So it's not original content, and it's not, if someone does, it's stupid, because if someone does read it and say, I want, like, for instance, there's a Teen Titans one, and the Teen Titans one, you read it, it's like the Teen Titans. It's Robin and Starfire and the ones from the cartoon that everybody mm-hmm. knows. And yeah. then those people, let's say they do go to the comic store. What are they going to find? A thing that is nothing like that.
Yeah,
and also is super unenjoyable. You know, they like that Batman, and then they're going to go and they're going to see, oh, this is the one where so-and-so almost gets shot in the face, or like,
yeah.
and nothing against Tom King. You know, I think his run is ups and downs, but like, other books that he's done are amazing, and I would sing his praises forever. But all that Walmart thing has done is it's making me go to Walmart, because
right.
I love Nick Darrington and I love this Bendis take on Batman. And so I'm, on one level, it's like that crapshoot of not knowing if you're going to get it, which is kind of an old school newsstand feeling that
yeah.
I hadn't felt in a long time, which is nostalgic for me in a way.
Yeah, a lot of people feel that way.
But it doesn't, all it does is force me out of, it makes me go to Walmart,
yeah,
then
no,
I don't
I mean,
want to go there. I don't like Walmart.
Some of my, like, when I say like indie friends, I mean like punk rock artist friends who are literally like, they make their living making punk rock art. They went to get the Swamp Thing copy
yeah.
and bought multiple copies and then posted on Instagram that they had them for anybody who missed out. And it was like,
that's why it sold out so fast.
And it's so weird.
I got one right when they came out. I did. That was one
yeah.
I got, although the writing on it was terrible. Brian Azzarello should stop. But the art was good.
It's just weird.
Like,
because
the idea,
like,
that I have to go to Walmart every
two weeks yeah.
to fucking look for comics. And then when you go there, they don't even know. I mean, because the thing is like, they're not even Walmart. Like, Walmart is selling them, but it's a third-party vendor that brings the comics too. It is literally a newsstand
right.
operation. It's like whoever. It's like Hudson or
yep.
whatever that does magazines or whatever.
So weird.
Yeah, and so anyone at Walmart, like, don't go to Walmart and say, hey, where are the comics? Or, like, can you tell me when the new one is out? Because they have no goddamn clue.
That's fascinating.
It's weird.
Oh, well. Anyway.
Sorry we talked about Walmart for so long.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
Sorry.
Anyway. Okay, so that's it.
Oh, but what can we do? We can
but instead of
order
doing that,
all of the comics we talked about.
Or you can order them through our website, through coastcitycomics.com. We have all of the stuff that we talked about this week. We have trades. We have discounts. We have all sorts of... We have discounted first issues of trades. We have signed things by some of our friends that we have through the shop. Like all the Sean Murphy stuff that we have is all signed and up on the website. Copies of Tokyo Ghost trades, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Jonah Ray from Mystery Science Theater signed all the MST first issues. We got a bunch of those up there. You know, we got a bunch of stuff that, you know, like you Walmarts don't get.
No.
So,
Walmart has
go.
None of that.
So, yeah.
Also,
check it out.
P.S.
And,
fuck
and,
Walmart.
And also, P.S., code BLARG, BLARGH exclamation point, to get free shipping in the U.S. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Bye.